Loyalty carries a price, and no one knows this more than Agent Michael Thornton, a talented young agent cast out by his government. Thornton is the only one with the information needed to stop an impending international catastrophe. To do so means he must cut himself off from the very people he has sworn to protect. As players determine how to accomplish different objectives, the decisions made and actions taken in each mission will ultimately transform the type of secret agent Michael Thornton will become. Every choice the player makes as Michael Thornton will carry consequences for his future and the fate of the world.
Wow. Very dramatic. I feel like we're about to start talking about a James Bond movie, but it won't be a James Bond movie. It's much, much worse than that.
That's what I was hoping for.
Alright, welcome back everyone to I Love This Terrible Game. I am your co-host, Michael Colby.
Aren't you technically my co-host? Not their co-host?
I think you're technically my co-host.
Oh, okay. I'm Chris Shaughnessy, obviously.
And today we are joined by the host of I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside, Scott Wachter. Hey, Scott.
Good evening.
All right, so you are here today to talk about Alpha Protocol.
Yes, one of the best 6.5 out of 10 games there is.
So for those of you that don't know, Alpha Protocol is Obsidian's game that they made. Was this directly after Fallout New Vegas?
Sort of. This is the first game they released after Fallout New Vegas, and I think the story of the two games that almost got made in between will explain some of the problems this game had.
All right, well, that's what we're here to learn about today. So do you want to give us some of the history of Alpha Protocol, and then we'll talk about the actual game itself?
All right, so Obsidian is, of course, made out of a bunch of ex-Black Isle employees who made their name on rushing out a very buggy but well-received sequel to Knights of the Old Republic on, again, a very short time frame, about 18 months, which they followed up with a very buggy but well-received 14-month contract to produce a sequel to Fallout 3, which was then followed by a contract with Disney to make an RPG prequel to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I am not making this up.
Oh, wow. What?
That game was... Yes, it was just called Dwarfs, and it was a prequel about the Seven Dwarfs. This was canceled, perhaps because, not because that's a terrible idea, but because Disney, every 3.5 months decides they don't want to make video games anymore.
Mm-hmm. True, yes.
So as Dwarfs was being slowly... canceled very quickly, two people from Obsidian started creating locations and characters for a spy game, while the rest of the team would work on a game based on the Aliens franchise, which was also canceled. So all of a sudden, the only contract they have is with Sega to make this spy RPG, so the remaining 60 members of the staff all get shuffled into this immediately, so they don't go bankrupt, except there's like literally no plan, no design document, and no team leads at all. It's literally two people coming up with cool ideas for spy stuff in the break room, and then, oh, this is the only thing that will keep us afloat for the year, and then halfway through, Sega cut their budget.
Jesus.
Wow, that is just... They had no luck at all. Terrible.
Yeah, no. And then as Sega was cutting their budget, they, in order to get some of that budget back, they sold the IP to Sega, which I'm sure is just a great investment for them.
Yes.
They don't even actually sell this on Steam anymore. You can't buy a copy of this game anywhere.
Wow.
So again, while this is happening, they also frantically keep signing on sequel contracts. So as the game is finishing, half the team has to leave to start making Dungeon Siege 3.
Wow, the very famous and well-reviewed Dungeon Siege 3 that I've totally heard of and everyone I know that has played.
You know, the beloved Square Enix franchise. Not any of the other beloved... There are no other beloved Square Enix franchises, just Dungeon Siege.
This is true.
It's true.
And everyone knows that Dungeon Siege 3 is the best Dungeon Siege game.
Yes.
So, wow, that was very interesting. I did not know that stuff about this game. I knew that it had, like, a troubled development cycle, but I didn't know all of that. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, it's just Chris Avalon, perpetual Kickstarter backer reward tier, is just doing his damnedest to get anything that will pay rent on the studio, and everyone on staff is kind of hosed all the time.
Wow.
That sounds like a great place to work. Yeah, let's just, you know, never have money to do anything and just be flying by the seat of our pants all the time. It's what I want to do.
And everyone knows that if you want to make money, you sell your IP to Sega, who is notorious for making good decisions with their franchises.
Yes.
Hey, I mean, they realize that people like Yakuza. They realize that, and then somehow managed to not ruin it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I do enjoy the Yakuza games. I didn't play the new one yet. I heard it has weird combat, but that is also it's not what we're here to talk about today.
Yeah, we can do... Yakuza is not for this podcast.
No.
Except for Dead Souls. We could talk Dead Souls.
Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe we'll have you back on to talk about Yakuza Dead Souls. That's the zombie one, or was it Ghosts?
It was zombies. It was mobbies.
Okay, so it was like the, what was that open world crime game where you played a cop? They also had a DLC with zombies.
Oh, Sleeping Dogs.
Yes,
that's
Sleeping
a great
Dogs.
Game, and
yes.
I love it. I love it dearly, so I don't, I could talk about Sleeping Dogs a lot, but that's a brilliant game and not, doesn't belong here.
Yeah, no, it does not. Alpha Protocol does, in fact, belong here, though.
Yes. So, where do we start?
I don't know. I was looking at the reviews. It's not quite as hated as I remember it being, but it is definitely one of those very split. It's one of those very split reaction games. People either love it or hate it.
People either love it or they hate it, which is great.
Yeah.
So, why don't we start with what it is about this game that, I mean, because you got to us pretty quickly about this. I talked to you about this before we even started the podcast, when this was just an idea, and you were like, yeah, Alpha Protocol. So what is it about this game that you enjoy so much?
All right, so this was... I have a fairly good list of like 6 and 7 out of 10 games that are, I admit they're 6 or 7 out of 10, but they're kind of elements of them that are just really, they grab me. They grab me. And I think this game has a lot of stuff that's very smart and very well implemented on the story side and the dialogue side. Like this game invented the 4 dialogue options on a timer thing that Telltale would run into the ground. it has a really good sense of, it has a really good tone. Like, it has a really good tone for story. It really knows what it's doing in that sort of contemporary spy fiction thing. And just the way the story plays out and the way all these different parts still click together, even if you do things in completely different orders, and even just behave sort of randomly. If you load up Mass Effect and literally just go back and forth between Paragon and Renegade, you don't have a sense of a character for Shepard. But here, as you go through sort of like the three moral axes, moving between them makes sense for one person, and scenes where you go heavy on one will still dovetail into the next one without any sort of like weird discombobulation from the player or anyone watching.
And that's hard to do, because a lot of games with sort of the like the Paragon Renegade system are very binary. Like, if, like you said, if you make one decision, you sort of have to keep making that decision, or else it just totally takes you out of the game. So having you be able to like choose between how you want to do each encounter, yeah, that's actually really cool.
Yeah.
And there's even reasons to shift mid conversation, where it's like, I should say that the three sort of moral axes are by strictly business, sort of more suave, and just straight up rampaging aggressive machine. Just like, you're just shooting people in the kneecaps all the time.
That sounds pretty good to me. I mean, that would be my choice most of the time, probably.
Yeah, I mean, and the moving between them makes sense. Like, you can be someone who escalates. You can be someone who tries to good cop, bad cop themselves in one scene, and it does work. Like, the dialogue plays back and forth with it really well.
Yeah, that's great. I don't know why I don't remember any of this stuff about it. I did only play this when it came out, so...
I mean, it's been 10.5 years?
Yeah, that's... Wow. I actually do remember, like, being excited to buy this. Like, I was waiting for this game to come out. I think I just had my expectations too high when it came out. Because it was on the tail of New Vegas, and that was when I was on my huge Fallout kick. So,
it's hard not to be excited about New Vegas when you're like anything related to New Vegas, because just that game just nailed it.
Yeah, it's the only like Bethesda game that I can still play, and it holds up. Like, I'll play the hell out of New Vegas, and like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, they did used to make these games good.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of it. And not talking about how New Vegas is brilliant, because that's like 4 hours of conversation.
Yeah, yeah, we're not going to talk about New Vegas.
This game, as much as I do come here to praise how it handles dialogue and story choices, I think this is the last Obsidian game that included any sort of romance options. I think they backed away from that pretty hard, starting definitely in the Pillars of Eternity Tyranny sort of era, where they were very deliberately like, no, we're not doing the romance scenes, we're not doing that game anymore. But this still had romances, and that means you, as playing this, you get a sex scene with a 70-year-old Russian badass lady. She's like ex-KGB hardcore, and she's hilarious. So I'm hashtag Team C.
So that's not the only sex scene you can get, though.
No. There is some more typical Bond girls, you might say. There are there's a reporter and a historian that you end up hooking up with. But for the most part, no, it's Team C. Crazy old badass Russian KGB agent. She shows up at the end in a tank, dual wielding machine gun.
You know what? I was like on the fence about it, but that sold me on it. Driving a tank, dual wielding machine guns. I'm all in. Let's do it. Excited now.
Yeah. You know what? I came into this not thinking you were going to be able to change my opinion on it, but just even knowing the history of the production, and then hearing just about the 70-year-old dual wielding tank driving ex-KGB lady sex scene, like, I may give this game another shot.
And I mean, the hacking mini game is fun. It's got a good hacking mini game.
Okay. I mean
that I liked it.
Yeah, we're not here to really change people's minds. We're just here to, like, sort of explain what it is about these games that we enjoy. So you're definitely doing a good job at that.
I mean, I'm not gonna pretend it's perfect. Like, the game is pretty clunky. The stealth is weird. This is an RPG. You do get to pick and choose skills to level up in advance, but the only skills that seem to work or make sense are stealth, pistols, like the one that makes you better at picking locks and hacking doors, and kung fu. That's it. Like, if you pick shotguns, you just lose the game. You lose all the time.
Okay. Well, now we're getting pro strategies for it for when we do decide to start playing it again.
Yeah, if you find a PlayStation 3 copy of this lying around, take stealth, because it just lets you do... Well, it lets you fix the hiding problem, where you still have to move cover to cover, but after, like, 6 points of stealth, you get this perk that just turns you invisible the first time someone spots you. Like, you get, like, 10 seconds to hide from them somehow.
All right.
Yeah. You can do it in Cyberpunk right now, and they don't explain it any better. It's just like, oh, you've been spotted. If you can hide in 3 seconds, it doesn't count.
I've played a bunch of games since this came out that has that sort of mechanic. If you put enough points into stealth, you can hide from people when they see you. I'm trying to think of one. I played one not that long ago, but... But yeah, that seems like something that they've implemented in a lot of games since then.
And pistols is the only good weapon skill, not because pistols are amazing, but they just it gives you VATS. It just lets you pause time, line up three. I think it's three to start, and then, like, by the end, it's like 7 rounds, and then unfreeze time, and then you fire off, and everything's dead.
Oh wow!
You think you're going to use that when you're, like, you know, shooting your way through a museum in Rome and there's just, like, mercenaries hiding behind famous art, and then you just, like, you know, pause time, tap, tap, tap. Oh, all 6 mercenaries are dead? Great. No, you use it in boss fights. The boss fights are terrible, but when you can pause time, line up 7 headshots, and then unpause time, and the boss is, well, he's still got half his hit points because this is a weird sort of boss fight system, but it's really convenient.
Yeah, being able to take 7 shots at once, that's very convenient. I mean,
it.
Yeah, this is, and we are obviously not opposed to playing a game that doesn't play great around here. So this sounds actually like a very interesting game. I definitely didn't give it as much of a shot as I should have, it sounds like.
I mean, no, I mean, I it's not a long game either, I should say. It's like it's there's only like 1 or 2 missions per area, so you're not like it's not a huge grind. It's not like, oh, you got to put 40 hours into it and do a bunch of character related side quests. It's like, hey, you're in Rome, you go to Rome to figure out like some shady mercenary stuff, and it's like, well, you can skip straight to the main mission, or you can do 2 side missions that make the main mission easier.
Okay. I also enjoy that as an adult with a family and a job. I do enjoy games that aren't like 100 hours long anymore.
Yeah, there's definitely that. And one other thing I've always liked is I'm a big fan of Thief. You play Thief?
Absolutely.
Old school?
Yeah, I play a little
Thief. So remember in Thief where you could like where you kind of had to like go room to room pickpocketing every drawer so that you'd have enough money to actually be able to afford gear for the next mission?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's back in a big way where if like you want any reasonable amount of weapon upgrades or body armor or even just ammo, you have to be stealing. You have to be a kleptomaniac.
That's how I play RPGs is steal everything that's not nailed down. If stealth is an option, I'm going to take it.
That's better than me just murdering every NPC I come across.
You can probably do that, too.
Yeah, that's probably around.
Just murder as much as you need to. All right. What is that, you know, again, I apologize. I did not give this game as much of a shot, so I'm not super well-versed, but I think you did a pretty great job of explaining why, you know, you personally love this game, which is the whole point of this show. It actually sounds a lot better than what these Metacritic reviews have led us to believe.
Well, I don't think a lot of these guys are wrong. Like, I'm kind of got half an eye on some of this. And yeah, like Eurogamer and Game Informer liked it well enough. I wonder who wrote the Game Informer one. That was, who wrote this one? Oh, Jojuba. Okay, yeah. No, like some of these are kind of being fair in the same way I am, where it's like, hi there, this game is not especially good, and I will say that the last level of this is really rough, and it is pretty glitchy. I think even now, if you could find a PC copy and mod it, it would still crash during cutscenes.
Wow.
For whatever reason, only the PS3 version really didn't have problems, and I still had this game not load cutscenes for me. So, like, I'd just sort of get 2 minutes of black, and then I'd load up, and I'm like, well, I guess I'm shooting up this Russian mafia's Oso's house. All right.
I actually do have the PlayStation 3 copy, so I might put that in since I sold my PlayStation 4 because I thought I could buy a PlayStation 5, and I haven't been able to find one. So right now my 3 is hooked up in my living room.
There you go. Then.
That might be something to do while I'm waiting to play Demon's Souls.
Okay.
All right.
What else can I say about this?
I don't
think I've got anything else on this.
Okay. Hey, that's fine. I mean, like I said, I think you did a very good job of explaining why you enjoyed it personally. I'm actually thinking about giving it another shot and leaving my Fallout New Vegas bias behind me, because I think that definitely sullied my experience the first time.
Well, I'll tell you, it'll also ruin your experience of Dungeon Siege 3.
Well, I have no expectations for Dungeon Siege 3, so... All right, Chris, you got anything hilarious to say?
No, not this time. Next time. Hit me up next time.
I'm sure. All right, well, do you want to get to the... did you have any bad reviews? This is my favorite part of the show, is finding out what people who didn't like it thought of it.
Well, I mean, we do have a review from perhaps wee babby Jim Sterling, back when he was just barely starting at Detoid.
Oh boy.
So let's see, less James Bond than Inspector Clouseau. Absolutely dreadful. I'm looking for some choice lines. Clever narratics rendered worthless. Thornton's a dull character. Characters are as dimensional as sheets of paper.
Ooh.
The AI is a shambles. That's actually true. That's true. Oh, right. The sticky covered does not make any sense. That's fair. This is from that very, very much the Deus Ex One school where you're statting a gun, perhaps overvalued for a shooter. So you'll point dead center on someone and miss because your stat with shotguns is terrible.
Yeah, that I did read a lot about in these reviews was that you can have somebody right in the middle of your crosshairs and just completely miss them. Okay. Well, I pulled
the Sterling one is the meanest one, I'll say. The Sterling one, I think, is the meanest.
Well, Sterling is usually going to be the meanest review that you're going to find.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of his, but he did give Deadly Premonition a 10 out of 10, so He's not all bad.
He is not all bad.
I actually found one that I thought was pretty entertaining. I usually look at the user reviews because they're usually much more hilariously written. And this one is a 0 out of 10 on Metacritic. Well, the game was pretty good until I started playing. Production value is just terrible. Movement is clunky and enemies are incredibly dumb. Brought it back saying it could not get past install. So he's a liar too. I'd encourage others to save yourself the time and don't purchase this one. Maybe worth a rent for the consoles, but other than that, no thank you.
That one had some alright grammar for once.
Almost alright.
Yeah, but how many exclamation points did he use? That's
a good
none.
Point.
None. Not a single one. It's all periods, which makes it snottier to me. I got another 0 out of 10 here. This game is riddled with mini games. One of them, hacking computers, is actually impossible if you play with a mouse and keyboard. Thousands of compliments on the internet haven't been enough to change this minigame. Oh, nope. Thousands of complaints on the internet haven't been enough to change this minigame, which was created for consoles. Don't buy this game if you haven't a controller. You've been warned.
Ooh. He went with haven't. That I for some reason I always, like, I know that's a Britishism, but I always assume that's like a Polish person speaking English.
I always think it's somebody trying to sound smarter than they actually are.
Could be.
I love anytime anybody says that something is literally impossible.
Because it's never literally impossible. They're just.
It's never literally impossible.
They're just bad at it.
See, I think I'm looking at this on Steam for user reviews, but all the new ones are people who are fans 10 years later, so I don't think they're really gonna... Oh, here's a recent one. From 2 weeks... this was posted, yeah, like today or yesterday.
Wow.
From Red Mage.
Damn.
Wow, even for its time, this game was and still is garbage, period. Worst espionage game I've ever seen, period. He has 4/10 of an hour of playtime on record in the last 2 weeks.
I love these people who play these games for like 10 minutes and then go, nope, this is terrible. I'm going to leave a 0 out of 10 review for this game.
Yeah, it's like...
Ooh, this one has no punctuation. El Greco. If it was a narrative espionage game with just the story and the characters, I would recommend it. Oh, this is the only reason it has so many positive reviews on Steam. Unfortunately, there is more frustrating and hard mini games like hacking, lockpicking, and boo-passing doors, which is the most pain to do and to enjoy because of the controls and the time you always have to be very precise in order to succeed. The enemies are just careless death wish idiots who just ignore all the dangers of a firefight and charge you trying to hit you in the face like maniacs. Oh, exclamation point there. But even with changing the rewards with cheat engine and upgrading your character to the max from the start with the enemies are tough as nails and won't go down even if you shoot them with the bringer of apocalypse. Exclamation point.
Ooh.
Anyway, this game is not fun, at least for me, even if the story is complex and interesting. 4 exclamation points.
Wow.
The sign of a troubled mind.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. Well, it sounds like, it sounds to me like you're...
He played this in November. He wrote this review November 18th of last year.
Well, it sounds to me like you are wrong for liking this game.
Oh, no, I will admit to being bad and wrong. I am fine with that. You can have me back when you launch your spinoff series, I Hate This Game You Love,
actually,
where I explain that Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines is trash.
I am going to let you in on a little secret now. That is a plan that we have. We do plan to do I Hate This Wonderful Game, which is going to have us talking shit on games that everybody loves.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Vampire the Masquerade.
All right. Well, you're booked for that one.
All right.
Okay. So, I think that's about going to do it then, unless you have anything to wrap it up with. It's fine if you don't.
No, I think that's it.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Lovely. Then I'm just going to ask you to plug any projects you're working on, any social media websites that you have.
All right. So if you, too, like going through reviews from 10 years ago, you can look me up on RP Gamer. I used to be the tabletop games editor over there. I still technically am on staff, but I just use my privileges to tease people instead of being a proper forum moderator. You're not harassing anyone, but your content bothers me, so I'm going to ruin your everything you do. I am on Twitter as FS_Wachter, that's WACHTER. I have my own personal podcast, which is I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside. It's on hiatus right now because I'm too busy with work, but it's been running for 9 years, so, you know, it's new to you. There's plenty of new stuff to you if you want to go through that. And if for some crazy reason you have an interest in the technology and sale of lighting equipment, commercial and residential lighting equipment, I put together news about light bulbs for my day job. You can watch me complain about Osram and Fluence and Signify for in 10-minute bursts with the lighting industry news brief.
All right, I like lights occasionally.
Well, that's great. You can hear me get way too detailed about white LEDs that don't need phosphors. New excitement, and I don't know how exactly the story of how I got that job is weird. The story that I'm good at it is even weirder. I was on the business news charts on Apple for 20 days in a row.
Wow.
This is a weekly show where I am explaining to people that UVC disinfection lamps are in fact dangerous.
Wow, I didn't even know that was a thing, but I'm interested.
I am not the only show about commercial and residential lighting. I'm like the fifth guy.
Wow.
Yes.
At least there are five of you.
Yeah. One of them is my boss. Like, I edit his show where he talks to designers and technical people. And then I got saddled with doing the new spin-off show somehow. And then there's a designer guy who does design news, and then there's like a standards body that does their own show, and then there's a sales guy who does an interview thing with other sales guys.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. We will link to that in the show notes so that you can click on that and go to it. And I am definitely going to do that. If nothing else, then just to see what that's all about. That sounds fun as hell for some reason.
It's crazy that I do it every... I explain it to people. It's like, yeah, no. So, like, every week I just read hundreds upon hundreds of stories about light bulbs, and then I assemble a little news brief, and then I read it to people, and it's like, yes, guess what? Detroit, they screwed up their streetlights. $3 million deal, just gone.
Wow. Okay, well, hopefully we can get you some traffic over there. Have you charting on Apple a little bit more. And I'm also going to check out your podcast. I love to go through backlogs of stuff. I have to listen to podcasts all night at work.
There you go. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And then I'm going to plug Jack Billings Presents Me and My Neighbor Michael. It's a comedy podcast about neighborhood goings-on. It's very weird, and Chris is also on it sometimes, and
same.
It's a lot of fun. And then I am at My Neighbor MICH1 on Twitter. Come check me out, and Now Chris goes.
Now I go. Yay. I'm gonna plug my Twitch channel, which is Xeno_Nox. I, you know, play games poorly, die a lot, and give chat shit for several hours on end. So that's a lot of fun, so come check me out over there. And then I'm on Twitter at Xeno_Nox. Just one word, no space in between it. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, then that's going to do it for us. And we will see you next week. Son of a bitch, I should learn by now to have the schedule open to see what the next episode is going to be.
Yes, you should have, Michael. How dare you? One of us needs to be responsible here, and it's not me.
No. It was my fault for having you have any sort of responsibility.
Yes.
All right, next week will be a surprise. See you next
Hooray!
Week.